I'm really happy to be here. I don't get to come back near as often as I'd like, so I'm excited to be here. I think maybe y'all have short memories. I think the last time I was here, I need to apologize to Justin, I believe, because I was supposed to give him a 6-verse reading, and I think I gave him a 60-verse reading for me that morning. So I appreciate y'all allowing me to come back here and present a lesson again this morning. If you want to turn to John chapter 16, is where we'll begin. We'll be in John chapter 16. Recently, I was reading a book. I was listening to an audiobook called Good to Great by a man named Jim Collins. In this book, he outlines a concept that really resonated with me. In fact, as I was thinking about a topic when I was preparing this lesson, I kept going through multiple ideas, writing things down, and then just couldn't get it completed. And as I was listening to this book in my living room one night, I remember stopping mid-chapter and just started writing notes on this subject, because it immediately painted a picture for me of something that I believe would be extremely beneficial in my life and in my faith, and now I hope it will be beneficial for you this morning. This concept that he raised was called the hedgehog concept. It was something that was originally developed in the 1950s by a man named Isaiah Berlin. The concept contrasts two animals, a fox and a hedgehog. The fox being a very clever animal, right? It's clever, it's fast, it's strategic. It's really a beautiful animal. It has all kinds of tricks, it's always calculating, it's always thinking, it's always adapting and trying new approaches. Then you have the hedgehog, on the other hand. Not the most impressive animal. You know, it's kind of like a genetic mix-up of like an armadillo and a porcupine. Its behavior is not complex. It does the same thing day in and day out. It waddles around looking for its next meal. But the fox, it lurks in the brush looking for its next opportunity, preparing just the right attack. Yet when danger comes, the hedgehog, it does one very simple thing. What's it do? It curls up into a ball. But it does that one thing very, very well. And despite the craftiness and the cunning of the fox, very rarely can it best the hedgehog. Why? Because the hedgehog has boiled the entire problem down to one very simple truth. And it's a truth that hedgehog holds, and it's non-negotiable. Berlin puts it this way. It's in a short parable he writes in his book, where he divides people into two types of thinkers. He calls one a group of thinkers a fox and one a hedgehog. And he says this. He says, "Foxes pursue many ends at the same time. They see the world in all of its complexity. They are scattered and confused, moving on many levels, never integrating their thinking into one concept or unifying vision. Hedgehogs, on the other hand, they simplify a complex world into a single, organized idea, a basic principle or concept that unifies or guides everything. It doesn't matter how complex the world, a hedgehog reduces all challenges and dilemmas into a simple, indeed almost simplistic, hedgehog idea." And this was the thought that really resonated with me that night when I began writing the notes. It made me think that in a very complex world, the hedgehog survives because it anchors itself into one simple truth. And it holds on to that truth no matter what. And to modify what Berlin says to be more applicable in our faith, I'll say this. Those who are hedgehogs in their faith, they survive. That faith survives and it holds fast because they anchor into one unifying vision and truth. So today, it's not about me oversimplifying our faith or oversimplifying Christianity, but I want to talk about how we anchor our faith into one simple truth. When the world gets complicated and when doubts creep in and when life feels overwhelming, I believe that one simple truth is this, and that through the blood and body of Christ, He's already won. He's already victorious. And this is one of the most foundational truths of our faith. But it's also one of the easiest to forget. The idea that we're not fighting for victory right now. We're fighting because he's already won a victory. And what I mean by this is when we're fighting for our faith, when we're engaged in something that we often call spiritual warfare, or when we're standing firm in a storm, we don't have to do it from a place of desperation or weakness, a place of uncertainty or fear. We can hold the line and faithfully push forward and overcome from a place of strength and a place of assurance and hope, because victory has already been accomplished through Christ. So we can resist sin not out of fear, but out of allegiance. We endure suffering not because it's meaningless, but because Christ has already walked through it and overcame it. And we can remain faithful not because we're uncertain of our ending, but because we have a secure future. In John chapter 16, where I had you turn, in John chapter 16, verse 32 and 33. In John chapter 16, verse 32 and 33, he says, "Behold, the hour is coming, and indeed it has come, when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me, and I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world." What you probably notice now, and what you probably noticed through your whole life as you read this text, is what he does say and what he does not say. He doesn't say, "I will overcome the world. I will overcome it someday." He says, "I have overcome the world." He was certain of what was about to take place on the cross and in his resurrection. It's a decisive battle that he was going to win, was going to defeat death, defeat sin, and disarm the enemy. Hebrews chapter 12 has a similar thought. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand and throne of God." It says we're told to lay aside every weight and sin that hinders us from enduring, and we're supposed to endure forward. Because why? It says we have a founder and a perfecter of our faith. And it's a good reminder that we are not the founders and perfecters of our faith. That he is. And he accomplished this in victory at the cross. And now it's going to later say in victory he sits at the right hand of God. And later he's going to continue to see that he intercedes for us at the right hand of God. And I know that today there's many here, and if not everyone here, understands this concept. I have no doubt that you believe this, but I want to establish that this is a foundational principle of our faith. And it is, I believe, the simple truth that our faith must be anchored in a very complex and very confusing world. And here's why I think this really matters. A moment ago I mentioned something that sometimes we call spiritual warfare, this idea of fighting and being in the midst of a storm. If you're like me, terms like that, maybe you're not like me, but if you're like me, terms like that create very grandiose ideas in your mind. They don't always feel relatable. Maybe, I mean, I'm not in the trenches fighting for injustice. I'm not on this grand scale. I'm not fighting for the big movements of the day. I'm not really engaged in spiritual warfare. I'm just dealing with my own personal problems. But I want to challenge that thought at those more common applicable times when we're feeling doubts in our faith, when we're wavering in our commitments, when we're feeling overwhelmed or pulled or drugged down, or maybe we're just battling right versus wrong. I would argue that this is spiritual warfare, that it's an adversary trying to pull you away from the truth. And this can fall on either side of that battle. Maybe some doubts that we have in our life are founded, and they need evaluation. They need to be fleshed out, and maybe the warfare is that the adversary is wanting you not to dig deeper, to not ask questions, not grow stronger. Or maybe it's the other side of that battle. Maybe those doubts are simply coming from storms in our life that shook our faith. And the enemy really wants you to pull at those threads and unravel. And really, this is something only you can answer. But I want to encourage you during these times, if you will allow me to continue with this thread, to not fall into fox mode. A fox mindset, an over-analyzing mindset. Asking questions like, I think about how we tend to overanalyze ourselves. Am I believing enough? Do I feel enough? Is my theology just right now? Why don't I feel close to God right now? And before you know it, our faith feels fragile because we've made it rest completely on ourselves. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying these questions aren't important. Most likely they're truly questions you need to address. However, if we're grasping at the complexity of our current circumstance and we're scattered and not addressing our problems with a clear and singular truth, then we're likely to fail. But the hedgehog response is different. Let me tell you why. It says, even if I don't feel strong today, even if I don't have all the answers right now, even if my faith feels small at this moment, has Christ stopped being victorious? Is that one simple truth changed? And the obvious answer is no. If the hedgehog understands that the way to remain alive and to survive and to stand firm is to return to this one simple truth, for him it's to crawl into a ball and survive. For us, I believe it's returning to our foundational truth. Not by ignoring the questions, but by placing them on a firm foundation that doesn't move. It doesn't eliminate the struggle we're going to deal with, but it gives you a very firm place to stand while you struggle. So I believe the encouragement that I gained from this is when I see the complexity of the world in front of me, when it feels daunting and it feels overwhelming and it's hard to see, I guess you could say, see through the noise, try this. Return back to simplicity. Return back to the foundational truth that you know and that you fully believe and that can stand any litmus test that your mind's going to throw at it. Because of Christ's love and his shed blood, he is victorious. And the outcome is already established, and sin and death has been defeated. And then I encourage you from there, view your problems through that worldview, through that one unifying vision and truth. For men, I want to return to the example I gave a few moments ago about doubt. Doubts in our faith that sometimes arise. If we return to these key foundational truths, truth is that Christ loved me enough to die, so not only is he victorious, but now I can be victorious through him as well, then I hope that would lead you to a place of peace and the ability to say, because I know this, I'm going to seek and I will find. Because just like he promised victory and he fulfilled it, I know he also promises that if I seek, I will find. We see that in Matthew chapter 7. For those struggling with really heavy burdens that feel like they're too much to bear, we return to this truth that we can say, because he promised victory and he fulfilled it, that I will now find how to give my burdens to him as he's promised to do, promised us the ability to do, because he's invited me to do this. Matthew chapter 11 and 1 Peter chapter 5 both address this idea that he's promised that we can lay our burdens at his feet. If we know that he's promised victory and attained it, we know that he's going to be faithful in all his other promises. For those that feel bogged down by life, that are tired, and just feel like maybe they even cooled to a lukewarm state, and they're asking the question, how do I get back? How do I return? How do I revive? Return to the basic truth that Christ is promised and fulfilled. Because I know this and I know what He's done for me, I will find renewal day by day, as we're told. Renewal day by day in the light of His Word and the treasure that He's placed inside of us. Because He promised this too. And 2 Corinthians chapter 4 is where we find that. So no, this message isn't about oversimplifying Christianity. It's not about being naive. It's not about being imprudent. Actually, I want you to consider Proverbs chapter 27. In Proverbs chapter 27, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 12. It says, the prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. Proverbs chapter 27 talks about simplicity in a negative light. But that's not what I'm referring to when I'm talking about simplicity, returning to simplicity. This simplicity refers to foolishness and being naive. We are to be prudent in our pursuits as we hold the one singular unifying vision. Again, this isn't about simplifying Christianity, it's about stabilizing it. We study deeply. We ask hard questions. And we wrestle honestly. But when the world is loud and life is heavy, and when our faith feels shaky, we can return to the truth that holds it all together. That Christ loved us, that Christ is victorious, and through Him we have an opportunity for salvation. Because of His victory. So my encouragement this morning is this. That you be a hedgehog in the world of foxes. That you anchor yourself to something that doesn't move. Find simplicity in the midst of complexity. And to live not in fear, but in confidence, in faithfulness, and in hope. In closing, I want you to consider 1 John. 1 John chapter 5. You look at 1 John chapter 5. Verses 1 through 5, it says, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God. And everyone who loves the Father loves whomever has been born of Him. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and obey His commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome. For everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world except the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? In that, I want to offer an invitation. For those that would be ready to confess Christ as the Son of God. If you know that Christ is the Son of God and He gave us victory, you're willing to confess that here publicly. If you're willing to repent of the sin in your life, if you're willing to submit and commit to Christ fully and live faithfully with Him, we encourage you to come forward now as we stand and as we sing.